I've been a primary author of two of the largest tax cuts in the history of our state.
Let the eagle soar.
Son, go outside and dust yourself off. And when you feel good again, come back in and talk to me. We know what they would have done because we know what they did.
Cairo. I've been there. Cairo.
We are going to fight for Missouri values. We are going to defend life and we are going to protect our constitutional rights.
What I am trying to do to simply make tomorrow just a little bit better than today.
All right. Well, thank you for tuning in for the hashtag MoLedge podcast sponsored by the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce. This is Rachel Herndon Dunn, editor of the Missouri Times, here with my co-host, Becky Lohman of the Catalyst Group. Becky, we have a bipartisan show today. Two guests.
I don't even know how it's going to go with one extra guest. It'll probably be crazy.
I know. I mean, whenever the podcast first started, we had like four guests because we'd get one Democrat, one Republican, and then one lobbyist, and there'd be two co-hosts. It was wild.
And we've taken a little break since our last one, and I think it was just to gear up for two guests today. It took a good month, I think.
We've been training.
Prepare. Right. We'll see.
So our guests today are State Representatives Tom Hannigan and Greg Razor. Welcome to the hashtag MoLedge podcast, Representatives.
Well, thank you.
And you're from opposite sides of the state. Razor, you are from Kansas City.
Kansas City.
You got Brookside and Waldo, right?
Brookside, Waldo, and the Plaza. Come spend money.
The best part.
It's a fun place to hang out in KC,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
And you are from St. Charles?
St. Charles, yep. I've got Old St. Charles City, Main Street, where the first state capitol originally was. And then I have Portage de Sioux and West Alton.
I just recently visited Old St. Charles for the first time ever, like 3 months ago.
It's
and
darling.
Great place,
it's awesome.
Right?
It really is.
Get a plug in there for St. Charles and tourism.
I thought it was kind of funny. I have a baby who's just over one, and at the time she was still in a stroller. So we were like going up and down all those stairs, and it was going really well. Anyway, so I heard on Monday you two are planning an event. What you doing?
We are. So Tom and I are on different sides of the state. We're in different political parties, but I guess you could say we play on the same team. As the two openly LGBT legislators in the state. Last year, we got together with Representative Randy Dunn, who is no longer in the chamber now, and we invited the other openly gay staff members, and we just kind of went out and had dinner and drinks one night and just had a nice time. And this year, as we got to talking about we need to do this again, it kind of snowballed and has become an actual event that we're hosting next Monday night.
Yes. It's a one night only kind of deal, so you need to be there. April 9th, Monday, Patty's Bar, we're taking it over, and it's just going to be a great time. Everybody's welcome. We really want it to be bipartisan, so Greg invited the Democrat side. I invited my party side, the Republican side, and we're just going to have a good time.
So I know there's been some, like, activist, like, lobby days with, like, promo and other groups like that, but is this the first, like, Capitol Pride Day?
As far as we know, yeah, no one's ever done this. So when an organization like Promo comes in, you know, they're bringing in outsiders into the Capitol. We wanted to have a moment where the members, the House members, Senate members, staff, the lobbyists, everyone here inside the building could come and have a night for ourselves. We celebrate Pride in the LGBT community in June, which is based around when the Stonewall riots happened in 1969. So we're not here when that happens. So this will be the first Capitol Pride, and should be a lot of fun.
And hopefully not the last.
But yes.
But we're kicking the ball here and getting it going.
I was just thinking, Ben, who's sulking in the corner, has been covering the restoration and renovations of the Capitol building, and I know they should be done before the state's bicentennial. That June, do you think you will have a parade?
Well, I have
you
not.
You got 3 years.
I have not thought of it, but
good idea. Good idea.
That's decided
great
today.
Idea.
We are.
And
yeah.
And
congratulations. You're now on the committee for this.
Very good.
For this.
I don't even want to offer this out, but in a past life, I actually organized the Beg and Pet Parade in downtown Soulard, so I like actually have credentials to organize a parade, and I regret saying this now, but
we're marking all of this.
I know.
I just confess that I actually know how to organize a parade.
No, I think
fun fact about
in.
Me.
I will say my sophomore year of high school, our class won the homecoming parade in Schuyler County.
I think
it was hardcore competition, let me tell you.
Yeah.
So, on the agenda for LGBTQ, right,
mm-hmm.
is MONA, Missouri Non-Discrimination Act, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, if that were to pass, what would Missouri look like?
Well, currently, so this is the 20th consecutive year that this legislation has been introduced. And what it does is add sexual orientation and gender identity to the state's human rights statute, so it protects in housing, employment, and public accommodations. Currently in the state of Missouri, it is still perfectly legal to fire someone from their job because they are, or you think they might be, gay. Tom and I can openly serve here in the House of Representatives, but someone like us who works at a hardware store has to worry each and every day. If my boss finds out that I'm gay or I'm a lesbian, will they fire me? And if they do, there are no state and there are no federal protections. There's no repercussions. So it's going to be a more inclusive state when this passes. It's going to be a state where LGBT people feel safe and welcome. And it's going to be a state where large companies like Amazon are going to want to come and do business. Currently, you know, if you're a large worldwide global organization, you know, they're not going to North Carolina right now, and they're not coming here. So this is one of the reasons why.
I can't think of another bill that's been proposed for 20 consecutive sessions. Like, that's just wild.
It is.
Is it wild or is it sad?
I think it depends on the legislation we're talking about.
on this, I think it's sad that after 20 years, we still can't say, you know what, let's not fire someone because they're gay.
Right.
What I find really interesting, especially, you know, this session too, is the awareness level is just, you know, skyrocketing, you know. And so what I think happens now is that I'm here on the Republican side, Greg's on the Democrat side. It's not just a Democratic issue, it's really become a bipartisan issue. So the more that we can do, and so thank you for having us on, because I think a lot of this just raises awareness. I think if you ask the average Joe on the street, do you know that there's this discrimination basically going on? They would be very surprised in 2018 that they are. So as long as we can keep the awareness, the conversations going, I think that we have a good chance of maybe getting it passed finally. So that's one of my main goals, is keep the conversation and the awareness going.
What is the resistance to the policy? Because, I mean, like you just said, it's 2018, and, like, mine and Becky's generation, the generation before us, we aren't cool with discriminating against really anyone for really any reason. We're pretty open to people being who they are and just bringing what they have to the table. What's the pushback?
A lot of it is sometimes just fear, not knowing. You fear sometimes what you don't know. And I think that what's happened on my side, I can speak to that, is being openly gay and being out there. I've had a lot of people come to me and say, you know, I have a son, I have a grandkid, I have a niece or nephew, I have somebody in church, I work with somebody. So it's been very interesting for me to see, you know, that just having these conversations, it raises this awareness. I think, you know, Kevin Engler, he had an interesting thing last session. He said, everybody should go home during summer break and just go up to your constituents and have, you know, ask the question, are you aware that this is going on in today's time? And I was like, that's really thought-provoking. So I did that, and I was amazed at how many people were like, wow, even with, like, Will and Grace and Ellen and all these things, this is going on. And I had a little chuckle there, but I was like, yeah, it is. So great conversations are happening. I'm really excited, again, that, you know, it's both a Republican and a Democrat issue. Even in the Senate side, we have a Republican and a Democrat bringing up this legislation in MONA in some format. So I think good things are on the way.
I keep thinking about the Rules Committee hearing a couple years ago, whenever now Pro Tem Har was chairman, they heard SJR 39. And Representative Henson from Northeast Missouri, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he changed Hansen. His vote because he had a family Hansen. Member. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right.
And yes. I think we'll keep seeing more of that.
I think we saw that last year when we debated this on the House floor during the SB 43 debate. And, you know, I don't think it was much of a surprise that on my side of the aisle people were lined up to talk about it. I think the surprise on the Republican side of the aisle wasn't simply that there were people standing up. It was who was standing up. And I don't mean this disrespectfully at all, but it was older white men who were standing up saying, you know, for 70 years I've been told this was wrong, and sometimes you just have to admit when you're wrong, and we've been wrong all these years. You know, they might say, my son is gay, my daughter's a lesbian, the the couple that sits behind me is a gay couple, and I don't want them discriminated against. And it's those men that have the courage to stand up on that side of the aisle and speak out in favor of us. I think you asked what are some of the holdups of getting this passed. I think there is just some, there are still some remnants of just old school discrimination. But I also think there was some business aspects of it that, well, here's another group of people that could discriminate if we pass it. Which my answer would be, don't discriminate against LGBT people, and then we won't be, you know, filing a lawsuit against you. But with the passage of SB 43, I mean, even the lawsuit kind of becomes harder to do. So I will be interested to see how the local chambers and the Missouri Chamber react to this legislation now that they got what they wanted last year with 43.
You know, Representative Hannigan sitting here wearing his realtor pin.
Yes.
And next week is actually the 50th anniversary of the Fair Housing Act. And while you were talking, Representative Razor, I was thinking about how far we've come in just that 50 years. And I think it's interesting that we still are discriminating against people. So what's, do you know what's going on at the federal level? If they had the Fair Housing Act 50 years ago, what are people in D.C. doing?
That's a good question. You know, I think, you know, we just got to keep making strides in everything that we do. And I just wanted to address kind of the business aspect real quick, if I could, not to change the subject on you too. But what's happening is when things are not working out, people rise to the occasion. So when we see this discrimination, I think it could go to housing, it could go to employment. People are doing the right things on their own, which I'm very thankful for. We have a lot of great companies here, like in St. Louis and Missouri, that took it upon themselves within their own culture to say, we're not going to discriminate. Even though Missouri doesn't have this and we don't have these laws in place, we as a company, we as an organization are going to say, we are not going to discriminate. They write it into their own manuals, their own policies, their own application process, and their whole human resources evolves around diversity. So I think you're going to see a lot of times, just even in things that are still out there, that are still a little cloudy, people rise to the occasion and are kind of learning how to take these problems on by themselves until we can get these laws in place where we don't have discrimination.
That makes sense. You wrote something.
Yeah, so, you know, I think what we see when we talk about this, I get asked a lot by a lot of people on the other side of the aisle who want to be supportive, and they say, Greg, is this really happening? Are people really getting fired from their jobs because they're gay? And I'm writing down if there's a word I can use. I think a lot of times, I think we know that most people, the vast majority of employers, want to do the right thing, and the vast majority of employers aren't going to fire someone from their job because they're gay. But I grew up in Pemiscot County. You grew up in Schuyler County. We all know out there that there are those few business owners that are going to say, I don't want that faggot working in my store. And we know them. We know who they are. And so this law has to protect the people that unfortunately are stuck working for that person. And a lot of our laws are there to protect against the bad apples. And we all know good and well that there are those few bad apples out there. And there are folks that are losing their jobs because of it, or are terrified to admit to anybody who they really are because of who they work for. And so that's who this really protects.
You know, something I find really interesting is I have happened upon having an 8-year-old son, and now I have a daughter. And whenever I met Parker, my stepson, he was like 3, and now he's in 2nd grade, which is cool. But explaining to him what he doesn't see at home. Like, he doesn't see us degrade anyone because of their race or their gender or their political affiliation. Really, anything. Maybe their political affiliation. But explaining to him that there's biases out in the world and him not understanding. And it breaks my heart because I genuinely don't know what to tell him because it's just so far beyond what I want to teach him. And so I truly hope, like, not as a journalist, but this will be changed, at least by the time he can run for office. Because he might not be as professional as you two about it.
Well, and I want to paint a little happy picture here, kind of, sort of. I want to mention some of the good things, because it always seems like we focus on the negative things. But like in my district, St. Charles, for example, you know, very conservative, although ties are changing a little bit even on that front. However, we just held our first Pride festival on the riverfront down on Main Street. And if you would have asked me years ago if St. Charles would have had a Pride Fest, I would have said, no way and heck. But we did. So I'm also openly gay. I got elected. We have a Catholic church that is actually a part of our coalition that has come to us and said, as a social justice program, we as a Catholic church here in St. Charles, Missouri, want to find out how we can be more accommodating, how we can, you know, bring in the fold of, you know, gay, lesbian, transgender into our faith. So there's a lot of good things that are happening. I think sometimes we focus on the bad things, but we're still not there. I'm still out there. I'm still going to fight till the end that, you know, everybody's treated fairly and not discriminated. But I do want to say there are some positive signs, and those are three that I can think of off the top of my hat.
I'm going to throw out a positive sign here. So this was a couple of months ago. I was sitting, it was a Wednesday evening. We'd gotten done with session, and I'm sitting at Patty Malone's having a beer with a friend of mine, sitting at the bar. And we're talking about our Pride night, and we're kind of in the beginning stages of it. And I said, you know, I don't know where we'll host it or where we'll hold it, what, you know, what it'll look like. And there was this lady sitting next to me, and she said, have it here on a Monday night. And I looked at her, and I said, well, I don't think they like to do political things at this bar. It runs people out. And she said, we're not open on Monday night. And I said, well, I still don't know. She said, I'm the owner. I'm telling you, have it here on Monday night. And so they are literally, here's the Irish pub right down the street from the Capitol in Jefferson City, Missouri. And the owner's coming to me saying, turn this into a gay bar tonight. I want you to. That probably didn't happen 20 years ago.
Let me get my line. One night, one night only.
One night, one night only.
So in other news and business of what's going on in the building, Representative Razor, you were on the budget committee.
Mm-hmm.
Been soaking in the corner still. The budget is out of the House now.
Yes.
Is that a relief?
Yes. Yes. Okay. It's a relief, and, you know, there's, I don't think anybody ever votes for the budget and is completely happy with everything in it.
Some would say that's what compromise is, when everybody's unhappy, right?
Everyone's unhappy, and that maybe that is what the compromise is. There's, you know, there's probably a lot of holes I can punch in the budget, but you do have to commend Chairman Fitzpatrick for what he did for higher ed this year. The governor, once again, let's be honest, the cuts higher ed has taken in the last several years, they're down. And the governor wanted to kick them while they're down. And at least the chairman stood up for higher ed. So as a Democrat praising a Republican, we try not to do that very often, but I'll do it. I was very happy to see that for higher education.
Well, and as a Republican, kudos to you know, the chairman and to the budget committee in general. It's one of the toughest committees to be on, and they did a great job. And as a Republican, I'm going to give a shout out to them. So I'm glad you gave them a shout out too. I know it was hard.
Well, I think the great thing about the budget committee is it seems like a place where it's a little more bipartisan than usual. I feel like you can see, I think maybe Representative Quaid offered up an amendment that dealt with sort of the welfare cliff. Cliff, is that accurate? So it's a place where I think you see a little bit more working together, and perhaps it's because you guys spend hours upon hours together in these hearings, and you kind of see a little more unity in the committee, which I think is really refreshing and is for the overall benefit of the budget committee. And Representative Razor, to talk to your point about higher ed, you know, when everybody remembers when we pitched Amazon, and one of the things they needed was a workforce. And without making sure that workforce is ready, the companies like Amazon are never going to come here. So looking to the next time a big company wants to come to Missouri, are we protecting our LGBT community? Do we have a workforce? Let's not make the same mistake again and put ourselves in a position where we have workers, we're not discriminating against them, and I think we'll probably see maybe a better result next time around.
And do we have the 21st century infrastructure in place so that those companies can get their goods out of the state and around the world? And right now, we are not doing that. We are not providing that.
You know, this is mildly shameless, and I'm sure Representative Hannigan understands, but the next Missouri Times magazine is coming out at the end of the month. And the theme of this one, because there will be the 30 under 30 that people ask me about all the time, the theme of the magazine is Leaders of Tomorrow. And poor Ben and Alicia have had to write all these future-centric pieces about, like, long-term policies and what is going on with infrastructure and transportation, and are we getting a Hyperloop? Which I'm sure, there's actually a list behind me in our office of reasons Ben drinks. And number four on that list is me, because I'm wanting all these future-centric stories and features about policies that Becky was just talking about. And it's an interesting conversation to have, especially in the era of term limits, because the longest you're going to be in the legislature is 16 years. And if...
You could have filed the Mona originally and been 4 years out of the General Assembly.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, that's crazy.
That is one of the challenges. Yeah. It really is. And the term limits. There's good and bad.
Yeah. That's something people are always talking about. Is like, how are we supposed to fully understand these issues in the short time we are here? Or how are we supposed to focus on the long-term goals whenever we need to get elected in 18 months? So, that was heavy. So, Becky, do you have five questions?
I do have five questions.
Or is it 10 questions? Because this is a little unprecedented.
Well, we'll say five.
We'll just figure it out.
Five questions, 10 answers, right? That's the difference.
Yes.
The answers are different. Okay. Question one, very timely. What is your favorite Easter candy?
Oh, Reese's peanut butter eggs for me.
That's the right answer. There's a right answer to that question, and that's it.
But there's different types of Reese's peanut butter eggs. There's the kind with the hard shell, and there's the kind with the soft chocolate shell.
Well,
as a Reese's connoisseur.
I'm traditionalist, so I like the ones that are basically just a big blob of chocolate and peanut butter.
Because the chocolate and peanut butter ratio is perfect.
Yes, perfect, yeah.
So that may be the correct answer, but I'm just going to be different for the sake of being different. Have y'all tried the Cadbury cream eggs with caramel in it?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yes. God, those are good.
So things covered in chocolate is the universal answer.
Pretty much.
Question two. If you could pick one person in the General Assembly that to be on your team to survive the zombie apocalypse, who do you pick?
Oh, wow, that's a good one.
I've made this note because we were joking with my family about which sibling, who would be the best survivalist, and there's a bunch of different strategies, like who do you leave for bait of the zombies so you can run away, who actually would help you survive. There's a ton of different strategies.
Now, this is not just for brownie points, but it might be a little bit of brownie points. I would have to say our speaker, Todd Richardson.
I thought you were going
to
say me.
You're my second choice. Todd, just because, I mean, he is just such a statesman. He gets it. He knows how to work on both sides.
Is he going to statesman away the zombies?
I think he could negotiate with them.
You know, I hear he's really good at camping and enjoys camping. Yeah. So maybe he's got some skills there.
My vote's Todd.
I think I'm going with Bruce Springs. He's just not making friends with anybody.
He's not taking any grief even from zombies. Nah. Nobody. Question three. What is your favorite spot to eat or hang out in Jeff City?
Anything Italian.
Okay.
I don't discriminate.
Okay. Okay.
Patty Malone's,
yeah.
Easy.
High on your list. Question four, we kind of referenced it a little earlier. What legislative topic do you want to know more about or wish that you know more about? Are you excited to learn more about?
Definitely the budget. I'm not on the budget committee, but I always say follow the money. I think that's one of the most important things that gets done here because you need money to do almost anything and everything. So I would actually trying to campaign a little bit to be on the budget committee next time as people term out.
I know we have some listeners who might be interested in that statement you just made. The same.
And that's a hard question because there's so much that you want to know more about. But I think the answer we need to figure out the most, and I'm not sure any of us have the answer, is what to do with K-12 schools and where do we go. The United States does a lot of things best in the world. I'm not sure K-12 is what we do best in the world, and I don't know how to fix it.
I find that really interesting coming from you, because you're from Cooter.
I'm from Cooter, Missouri.
And now you represent one of the most affluent areas in the entire state.
And I see problems with K-12 in both Cooter and Kansas City, and with our charter schools. I have lots of charters. I have lots of private schools. Rockhurst High School is in my district.
Academy Lafayette's in your district, isn't it?
Academy Lafayette is a
French immersion charter school.
And those kids are English-speaking kids in a French immersion school who are also taking Spanish.
Oh my God.
I judged one of their spelling bees. It was,
how did that go?
It was amazing because they would misspell. Sometimes they would misspell easy words, and they would be like, "No, this is English, and you spelt it the Spanish way." So I mean, it was, these kids were so smart. It was scary. Anyway.
Last question, a fun one. What is your favorite TV show?
Good question.
Who has time for TV? I think is the right answer for that. Right? People are watching TV.
This week in Missouri politics.
That's a good one.
Did I get it right? Yeah. Did I say it right?
Okay. Oh boy, that would have been a real...
Truly your favorite.
Truly my favorite.
If I need a drama, I'm going with The West Wing. If I need a comedy, it's How I Met Your Mother.
Good answers. So yeah, that's our 5 questions, 10 answers.
We want more questions.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I can Google them.
No, I was just kidding.
No, actually, I have a question, a follow-up to the last question. Do you prefer to watch TV like live when it's on TV, if you can? Or do you prefer like Netflix or Hulu or Amazon Prime or Flickr? Oh my gosh.
Oh gosh, that's a good one too. I guess I like to be able to fast forward, rewind, and skip parts I don't like, so...
I'm probably more of a Netflix binge watcher, except I do have my shows that are currently airing that get DVR'd, and that's a nice little weekend break to catch up on the middle.
I think it depends, right? Because spoilers are terrible, so if it's like this huge like Game of Thrones season finale, I want to watch that in real time, because otherwise I can't get on the internet until I watch it, right?
Exactly. For the same reason you have to watch sports in real time.
Right, exactly. Yes. Because if you don't watch it in real time, I feel like why watch it ever things like that.
I think there's so many really great original series on a lot of the streaming services that most of those aren't inundating social media anymore. Like, whenever House of Cards came out, that's all everyone talked about. But now I'm watching The Man in the High Tower, some High Castle, like 5 years later, and I'm like, this is great, and there's no spoilers, but my kid can't watch it. And that's rough. So we watch a lot of cooking shows in my house now.
We watch a lot of HGTV.
Yes. I've gotten Parker really into Fixer Upper, so he's currently heartbroken, but nailed it. I don't know if you've watched it yet on Netflix, but it's life-changing. It's about people trying to make cakes. Like, the awesome cakes. Like, unicorn. There's a Trump cake in the season finale. I recommend watching it. Like, I don't care how Trump. It's great. It's called Nailed It. And it's normal people trying to make, like, professional-grade realistic cakes or emoji cakes or a Trump cake. I will actually show you that my background is the Trump cake fail. Mm.
Becky, would you be up for this challenge if we went on the show? We could be...
Pass. Oh.
Well, anyway, thank you so much for your time today. We have Representative Hannigan, Representative Razor. Thank you so much for joining us on the
Come
hashtag.
Out to Patty's Monday.
Yeah.
Monday, April 9th, 7 p.m. or upon House adjournment. Be there.
Or upon adjournment.